You're listening to a podcast from 702.
You're with Azania Mosaka
on 702.
Right, let's talk about body odor. You know, so there is an interesting phenomenon that's happening in certain parts of the world. I don't know if it's happening here in South Africa, but it's called smell dating. People go out there, they get asked to do a little bit of exercise to work up a bit of a sweat. Then they get given these cotton pads to wipe sweat from their underarms and their chest and so on, and they pop it into a jar. And then the other people that I gathered that are at the smell dating event just sniff what's in the jar, and then you make a note of which scents, which smells you enjoyed or liked the most. And then at the end, they try and pair people who mutually appreciated each other's smells. So after reading a piece of a journalist's experience of attending smell dating in Russia, we got curious about how human beings, how we use smell, in fact, to communicate, because for many people, body odor can be seen as unappealing, you know, and that's why we have decades upon decades of trying to mask body odor with things like perfume, with deodorants, antiperspirants. But what if this obsession to block out body odor is in fact interfering with a very important line of communication via the sense of smell? And these helpful messages and aromas that we send every day could communicate something really valuable to others around our levels of anxiety, whether or not there's illness in someone, and maybe even romance, that there's chemistry at a whole other level. So we spray on things like deodorant, we put on roll-on, we use these products. What exactly are we blocking? Are we blocking our chances of finding love or finding another person or getting a better understanding of what somebody else is experiencing? So we thought, let's dig into this. That's why we invited Professor Shivesh Maharaj, the head of otorhinolaryngology at Wits University. Yes, I think I got it out right this time. Shivesh, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Zania. Let me start off by thanking you for giving me an opportunity to talk about this very interesting topic and to mention to you that I'm one of your biggest fans.
Oh, yay!
I listen to you. I really enjoy your show, and it's a really beautiful afternoon show. Whenever I get the odd minute in between my surgical cases, I love your topics and the way and your whole energy, and I'm sure you've got a very good sense of smell because you're able to smell a good story from a mile away.
My good old factory organ can do a good job, I guess. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you on the show. I struggled with the title, with your title a little bit earlier on, so really proud that I got it out. I mean, you probably get all sorts of questions about what is that?
Yeah, so that's Latin for otto, which is ear, rhino, which is nose, and laryngology, which is throat and voice. So ear, nose, and throat. That's basically what it is. It just sounds a whole lot better when you say a big word. I think I always tell our medical students and registrars, perhaps for the first couple of days of orientation, we need to teach you how to pronounce all the different terms
first
in otorhinolaryngology and see how fast you can say it. Over and over again.
So let's look at smell as a means of communication. It was curious to see that there was a time when scholars belittled the sense of smell. There was one guy, Immanuel Kant, who said all sorts of horrible things about smell. So as a means of communicating the state of a human being, how significant is it and what are we communicating with that sense?
So often smell has been relegated to what we call the neglected sense.
Mm.
And I think that's mainly due to the society that we're living in. Compared to the rest of the animal kingdom and human beings as well, we have many, many senses, of which sight has probably taken the dominant at the center stage. I mean, you watch things on television, within the world, you see things, and hearing is probably second. And our world is dominated by images and color and sound. And smell has kind of taken a backseat, but smell is extremely important. From evolutionary stages, from mothers and child bonding with each other, from us recognizing people within our own community, our sense of smell allows us to do this. So going forward, our sense of smell is going to become more to the fore.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as more research is done into it, we're going to appreciate it more. The one thing that the pandemic has taught us is how crucial smell really is.
True.
As you know, with the COVID pandemic, one of the things that has been noticed is that patients often present with a loss of smell. And even if it is just a decreased sense of smell, which we term hyposmia, this is still something that is quite disabilitating. And patients complain that they can't smell the coffee, they can't smell their perfume.
Mm.
So we have undervalued our sense of smell.
Yes. Yeah, I'll never forget that phrase, neglected sense, as you've described it. But you talk about babies, from birth, we rely on our sense of smell to learn the body odor of individuals that we love or that we need the most. And in that moment, it's the mother. And babies themselves, in fact, have such a beautiful scent, one of the most beautiful. And what function does that play? And can babies discern one mother from their own, for instance? Can they pick out their own mom just by scent?
Yeah, so from our evolutionary past, children were able to bond with their mothers by their sense of smell. And a child can understand who the mother is just from the first time that the mother breathes on the child. In fact, they believe that this relationship with the mother's odor actually starts before birth.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them may actually learn the smell of the amniotic fluid and the food that she ingests. So sometimes you find that perhaps when a lady is expecting and she likes mangoes, and the child comes out in a year or two later that the child actually likes mangoes as well.
Mm-hmm.
It also helps in facilitating and finding the mother's breast so that the child can latch and feed in that way. So this relationship between mother and child, it's probably an ongoing olfactory process.
Mm-hmm.
That one starts learning. The groundwork is laid whilst the child is still within the womb. And as the child continues to grow, this relationship with the mother is always there. So even before the child identifies the mother's voice or the visual aspect of what the mother looks like, the child is able to smell the mother.
It's absolutely important. Yes. And if we turn to romance or if we look at attraction, say someone's odor, it can be very attractive to one person. Say I find someone's odor very attractive, and then the next person finds it absolutely off-putting. What is it in the other person's smell, in their sweat and so on, that I would be responding to? What are the messages that are being carried through our sweat, for instance, that one would find attractive?
Yeah, so I think everyone has got a different bio set of odors, and everyone smells differently. What we call these, in terms of sex, is known as the sex pheromones. And these are molecules that typically inspire members of the species to behave like progeny-making automations.
So
there's a connection between certain individuals. So you may like somebody without ever meeting them. And that's how deodorants and eau-de-toilettes, those things work. By you spraying it on your body, certain ones will mix with your pheromones. And if somebody likes that, it will just enhance that smell that you naturally have. So in terms of dating, in terms of mating, I think the sense of smell goes far back. Before human beings actually started our formal courtship rituals, in terms of meeting each other and understanding each other, there's a good article that maybe our listeners can listen to by Nasch and Enter, which is a paper that describes the biochemistry of odor production, and this looks at the action of bacterial enzymes, and what it finds is that the crystal structure reveals some very intricate bacteria. So your bacteria may be different to somebody else's bacteria
in
the human hosts. And this, with a genetic underlying basis, may actually reveal some kind of genetic information which we've not really coded for at this point in time. So there's a lot of research that's still to be done in this. But to put it to you this way, everyone smells a certain way. And when we talk about smell, we're not necessarily talking about bad smells. Good smells and
like our natural scent, our natural smell.
Natural scent.
Yeah.
And then we're not talking about the sweat. I mean, when somebody says, I can smell you, they automatically think it's a bad smell. It's something that you need to spray on some antiperspirant or one of these colognes or perfumes. But our natural scent, a human being's natural scent, is actually very it's very appealing to other human beings.
And yet we hide it, we mask it, we hide our natural scent with deodorants. Where are you on that on that issue? Because there are those, I see when I was looking at this piece on smell dating, that there are people who say human beings should just allow themselves to experience their natural smell.
Now, I don't think anybody wants body odor. So let me start there by saying that from a social point of view, I think we have a long way to go until we're going to accept that. And it is an unpleasant smell, and lots of people are going to be turned off by that. And we condition not to enjoy unpleasant experiences, especially in terms of visual or hearing. It's like a loud sound. No one wants to really hear a constant loud sound, like a jackhammer, or have a bright light in your eye. Mm. So any strong smell is considered unpleasant. Now, in terms of using deodorants and those kind of things, I think because of the way we've evolved and in terms of our mating and our rituals, this has become an integral part of looking good. You know, they talk about the three S's before you go out on a date, and one of them is to shower. So we definitely need to smell good when we're going out. And it's a multi-million dollar industry.
Yes.
We know of lots of entertainers and stars that are coming up with their own different perfumes. Maybe one day you can come up with yours and we can market it for you.
I'll have to listen to that biochemistry of odor production since there is a science to do this successfully.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are people that specialize just in smell. They love, I mean, we know them. They're wine tasters, people that smell different scents, put them together, what's going to go out into the public domain. So this is it's quite a big realm within human existence and something that we've not really given as much importance to as we have in the past. Mm. One of the things about smell is that the actual olfactory epithelium, the actual olfactory nerve, is not a true nerve. It's actually a direct extension of the brain.
Oh.
And we believe this is, it's primal. In that it has evolved with time. So your sense of smell is going directly into your brain.
So what happens?
There's very few pathways.
Yes.
Unlike hearing, which has a very complicated pathway. It starts from the eardrum and goes through the middle ear, gets amplified and goes through the cochlea and then by the cochlear nerve. Smell is directly into the nose. It goes to a certain area, which is a 1 by 1 centimeter, which is found at the roof of the nose, which we call the olfactory cleft. Olfactory as in olfaction, sense of smell. And the specialized epithelium, as you know, is a type of tissue, a very specialized epithelial tissue that generally allows for penetration. So that there's little filaments that penetrate straight through the brain from the olfactory bulb straight into the nose. It's known as the cribriform plate, and through that we are able to sense smell.
Wow. But what about people whose sense of smell has been damaged then, or people who don't have smell, how are their lives affected?
So one of the things we noticed about the sense of smell is that it can be damaged for a number of reasons. And one of them may be due to a blockage. So someone who's got a cold or a sinusitis, or who's got nasal polyps, which are little growths within the nasal area. Or it may be due to advanced age, a viral infection or exposure to certain toxins. Certain neurodegenerative diseases will also present with a loss of smell and head trauma. So some of these are reversible, but most of them are not. And I think once the sense of smell is lost, it's very difficult for us to now go and regenerate and to recuperate that sense.
Mm.
So we don't appreciate our, and taste and smell are very closely related as well. So many of the things that we actually think we taste, and we're actually smelling.
Yes, we've heard that on the show with the Naked Scientist, which was also a wonderful surprise. Let's take a quick listen to this voice note. I only have 30 seconds for this, so it does mean that you'll be squeezed for time to answer, but let's listen.
Okay.
Hi there, if you can, it's Ronaldo here. If you can ask your guest, you mentioned something about the mother and what she eats and how they do it, but how does it happen where once she's given birth, that the child only latches to the father? That for me is a funny thing, because that's what happened with both my sons.
So the parent who didn't give birth, how does the baby latch onto them?
So once again, I think there's a certain connection to the father's sense of smell, because the genetic makeup of a child involves both mother and father.
Yeah.
So the sense of smell has got a genetic coding. And if the bonding, if those genes are stronger in the father and those genes are within the child as well, the child would be able to recognize him by his particular body odor as well, or his particular body smell.
And will learn that smell with time.
He will learn that smell with time.
Okay.
So it's almost, it's inwritten within his genes.
Right. Wow. Thank you so, so much. I think we have a newfound appreciation for our sense of smell. I definitely do.
Yeah, thank you. It was nice being on the show, and keep up the good work.
Thank you. That is Professor, that's Professor Shivesh Maharaj, the head of the Department of Otorhinolaryngology at Wits University.